Good evening, everyone. Good evening. You've tuned in to Paradigm Shifters, and oh boy, we really have a paradigm shifter tonight. He has made a huge difference around the planet in the way men and women understand each other, because we all quote it, men are from Mars and women are from Venus. But what happens when they try to work together? So let's talk to Dr. John Gray about his new book, which is called Work With Me. And that's something we all need to learn how to do. Welcome to the show, John.
Well, thank you so much. It's a pleasure, and I loved your introduction because it's quite true. For thousands of years, the community of women has been primarily women, and suddenly when women's community is joined with men's community, there's a potential for greatness, but also potential for greater stress if we're not doing it very consciously.
Yeah, and there's a lot of stories in your book about people, women who got very frustrated. I was thinking about how many women lawyers I know who walk away from that career, right? And I think a lot of what you're talking about here in the book, the eight blind spots between men and women. Do you want to talk about that? Because it's almost like I felt sorry for men and sorry for women, because we misunderstand each other, right?
I think we should feel more sorry for women here.
But I do feel like we judge the men for the situation that is very old, and they don't know any better. How's that?
That's exactly right. And mm-hmm. and of course, then the problem there is that when a woman misinterprets male behavior, she takes it personally. And when you take something personally, your stress level goes up much higher.
Right.
And so we have the evidence for that. When we do big tests have been done in Scandinavian countries where there's actually more equality of pay and equality of opportunity than anywhere in the world. And yet what you still see there is a lack of what I'm calling in the book gender intelligence, which is able to understand the differences between men and women. And where you don't have that gender intelligence, but you even have a lot of the things people are you know, saying we want more of, and I'm agreeing with that, greater equality, but it doesn't lower the stress levels of women. And in that environment, they've proven that women's stress levels are twice as high as men's and four times higher at home. And this is very, very significant in terms of our personal fulfillment. And one of the major contributing factors to why women are dropping out at high levels, high executive levels, and often just leaving the workforce whenever they can. So the number of entrepreneurs is dramatically increasing every year with women dropping out of that environment.
Mm-hmm. Well, who was the woman who was in a very high position in Washington and she left, her son needed her at home, and she went back to a job in Harvard, I think, or something. Do you remember who she was? She's very, very famous. I forget her name right now. But she was going back out of a very high position because she couldn't balance the home life. Do you remember that?
Well, I don't remember that particular one, but in our survey of many women, my partner in writing this book, Barbara Annis, has been hired by many Fortune 500 companies to find out how to keep these female executives at high levels that are dropping out.
Mm-hmm.
And what she found was that in interviewing them, and we have what's called we start out with an interview, which this book is based upon, called the Global Gender Intelligence Assessment,
okay.
GIIA. And what we found out was that was often just the story that's given, which is, you know, I want to dedicate my life more to my family. But often there's an enormous discontent in the way they're being treated in those environments, where they just go, you know, I've got better things to do in my life.
Mm-hmm.
And the same answer comes up when you look at there's a book called Lean In, where she was, Sheryl Sandberg is saying, you know, women, you need to lean in more. Well, we interviewed these women who were at very high levels who could get to higher levels and said, why didn't you move forward? And they said, because we're making enough money. Why do I want to work 20 more hours a week when I can have a more fulfilling life? So women are often intelligently saying, I'm not willing to sacrifice my personal fulfillment in order to make more money.
Now that sounds like gender intelligence to me.
Exactly, that's gender intelligence. And you know what? As women's influence increases into the workplace, it will make the workplace a better place for men as well. Because men don't know what they're missing. And that's, again, what I call gender blindness.
Mm-hmm.
They don't know how their lives could be richer if they had more time to spend for their relationship and their family. I was very lucky in my career which is when I married Bonnie, she was previously married before, my wife, and she had two little children, very young at the time, and she said, I don't want to have another child. Just, you know, being a single mother is not what I want in life, and so I'm not going to risk it with you. And I said, what if I promise, a blood promise, I will not leave you with another child. Will you have children with me? And she said, well, you promise, and you promise to be an equal parent, so if I need more help, you will help me. And I did. So our marriage and my career has always been balanced by this sort of ultimatum I gave her, which is, if I'm working too hard and you want more time from me, you get it. And, you know, she had the final say on that, and I'm so glad that I made that deal with her, because so many times I had work opportunities that could have made me even more successful than I am, but I wouldn't have known my children, and I wouldn't have the relationship that I have with them, and I wouldn't have grown in terms of my personal fulfillment along with my success. And my success was plenty, but like what men have to ask themselves, when is it enough? At a certain point, are you just sacrificing your life to make more money rather than taking more time to be with other aspects of your life, mainly your children, your family, and love, and so forth?
And what's happening in our society, because we're so, you know, the time has been so filled with work, 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 too. What's happening to the kids in a lot of cases? Not yours necessarily, because you balanced it out, but it's hard on the kids, isn't it?
It's tragic. And it's often overlooked and minimized. Even in Sheryl Sandberg's book, she minimizes it and says, you know, there's research that says it's not harmful to your children if you send them away and have somebody else raise them. And I differ. I look at the research. Basically, she says, but the quality of your relationship is much more important than where you send your children. Well, of course, that's true. And if you're devoting all your time to work, and then you come home and you compensate by devoting more time with your children, then there's little left for your relationship. And so what you see then is 52% of children being born today in America, their parents are not married, and often the man is not available for those children growing up. Mm-hmm. So, you know, what's happening is a tragedy with the quality of marriage today. And it doesn't have to be that way. My message to women is you can have it all, but you just can't do it all. And you can't have it all at once. So there's like finding the flexibility, it's not all or nothing. And what helps us define that is creating a workplace which is more understanding of who women are, what they contribute, how the environment affects women versus how the environment affects men.
Yeah, I want to throw another word in, which is valuing the difference. That's the thing I kept picking up as I went through the book. You're valuing the differences in a way that we don't usually see so clearly.
Yeah, and you know, that's a difference, a big difference as well in this book, because people want to know, how's this different from men are from Mars, women are from Venus? Well, in our personal relationships, what women bring to the table, men value. We're hunting. We're looking for a woman to love us, to appreciate us, to have physical intimacy with, to create a family with. So we have a built-in valuing of what women bring to the table, although sometimes that's even missing, and my books help with that. But in the workplace, what's missing most is that women have amazing abilities that they bring into the workplace that men are not even aware of. It's a huge blind spot. It's like I'm telling men, I say, you know, there's a pot of gold buried in your backyard and you don't even know it's there, so
oh,
you
gosh.
Can't even find it.
Yeah,
they don't even know what they're
sense.
Missing.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, these are the examples of the 8 blind spots. Is one is where women don't feel valued and appreciated. Mm-hmm. If you interview, we did the interviews with over 100,000 people.
Wow.
If you interview men and women, it's a huge thing over many years. This is from the Global Gender Intelligent Assessment. So we ask them all these questions, and we keep records of it all. And what you'll find is half the women in the workplace feel that they're not being appreciated.
Mm-hmm.
And over 80% or 90% of the men, if you ask them, do you appreciate the women in the workplace, they say, yes, of course we appreciate the women in the workplace. So that's called a blind spot. Somehow these men who do appreciate women are not conveying that message to women, and somehow these women are not hearing that message. And that's a key area. You know, when you see that much of a gender gap, you want to bring attention to that. You want to say, why is this? And if we could bridge that gap, how much better the workplace would be for women. And a big part of that is that men's values do not intrinsically value what women bring to the table. In a sense, the workplace was designed by men for men, in a way that would support men and their objectives. And men's objectives for thousands of years in the workplace has been, I'll do whatever it takes to make the money to bring home the bacon so that my wife will be happy, and that will be my fulfillment. Mm-hmm. So men would postpone their personal fulfillment till they got home. Whereas when we're living in the workplace, and if women are going to spend their day in the workplace and then come home and be happy and fulfilled, we have to change the workplace. Mm-hmm. So it's more balanced. It's about making money, and it's about providing personal fulfillment for employees and people in the workplace. So this is a huge shift. So women, one thing, they bring to the table an awareness that this workplace is not designed to support health. It's not designed to support environment. It's not designed to support employees if they're of the other gender. And the other gender brings with it, besides the awareness that we need more personal fulfillment, that's all part of emotional intelligence. 80% of the buyers today for business are women. Mm. And if you can't think like a woman, you don't know how to market to those women. 50% or more of the employees are women. And if you don't know how to talk to the women and treat the women in the workplace, you have discontent. When a woman is, this is one of the studies that was done, we didn't do this study, someone else did this study, but a study that shows that when a woman is unhappy or discontent with a company, whether she's working for it or a client, she will tell, on average, 32 people how bad that company is.
Really?
Yes. Good and a man will only tell 3 people, and only if it comes up in the conversation.
Oh, interesting.
So it's another blind spot. Men don't realize the consequences and the possible benefits. But there's a commercial right now on Verizon, advertising Verizon, where it has a man with children in kindergarten. And he's saying, okay, kids, what's faster, what's better, fast or slow? And all the kids go, fast, fast, fast. And, of course, Verizon has this fast phone. That's what they're making the point.
Right.
But in reality, sometimes slow is just as important as fast, as we all were kind of learned, and the tortoise and the hare was kind of giving us that message when we heard that story. And often men feel that what women bring to the table is they want to slow things down. Well, what women want is not to slow things down. They want more discussion. They want to hear more diverse points of view. Diversity is so important to solving problems, but to somebody who just sort of, to guys, not all guys, but generally speaking, your guys, because all guys do have 30 times more testosterone than women, the function of testosterone is to react fast, to take quick action. And so what women do is slow that process down, so let's think before we act.
But John, isn't it that women want to build the fabric of the community or resolve the fabric, not the point? Does that make sense?
No, it makes great sense to me. To many men, it wouldn't make sense. But it's like women are aware of, we can use this term because it's been used before, of the emotional intelligence. Mm-hmm. It's more like a relational intelligence, which is to realize that we are a community. And when you're serving the community, when you're prioritizing and being aware of how that's going to affect others along the way, you're actually going to find a new solution that will serve more people, will build status, will build trust in a community, and then you will be more successful.
Mm-hmm. Just jumping back to you talking about the Nordic countries or the people where the gender intelligence is greater, but I think it says in your book that only 3% of the higher positions in corporations are women, even though they're... Do you think that we just aren't able to, adjust our thinking on how a good corporation runs, or why is it like that?
Well, let's look at those countries. By the way, I don't say their gender intelligence is greater. I say that they have greater equality in their policies and in their companies, and their what they say on the surface is, you know, greater equality when it comes to pay
oh,
of salaries.
Okay.
And so
that's
forth.
A little different, yeah.
Yeah, they actually have the lowest gender intelligence on the planet as far as I'm concerned.
Oh, wow.
Because the way they do it is they do it the opposite way, which is, they say that there's no differences between men and women. It's complete blindness to the differences between men and women. Now, I'm not saying everybody in the country feels that way, but that is the public policy.
Hmm.
That's the political correctness. That's the narrative that children are given now, is that there's no difference at all between men and women. And I'll add here is that's the narrative of the sociology department of almost every university in America,
wow.
is that there are no significant differences between men and women, and that the to be gender intelligent is to recognize there are no differences and that we're all the same and therefore equal.
Well, I like your science sections of this book for that reason, hey?
Yes. Yes, they're really quite fun. If I could pick one, I can pick, you know, every blind spot we talk about why that shows up. Because, see, a blind spot is literally something that we are wired differently. And the way we're wired, unless we're taught how to understand our blind spot, we just will never see it. So let's take this first blind spot we're talking about is women, half the women not feeling appreciated by men when most women are appreciated by men. Where is the disconnect? Well, the disconnect is basically women will say that I want to be appreciated for the outcome of what I do. Every man will say I want to be acknowledged and appreciated for the outcome of what I do. But women also want you to acknowledge the process they went through to get to that place. When a woman feels like you don't even know what I do to get to that place, then she doesn't feel as valued and appreciated. Men typically don't want to know what you did to get there. We just want to know, did you get the bottom line? Did it get done? And for a man in the workplace, payment and reward and bonus is all about the outcome, not about how hard you worked. And, you know, for women, it's not necessarily they're saying they want to get paid more, but they want you to understand what they're putting into the job, that often women are working much harder than men, quite typically. They put a lot more into it. And by simply acknowledging that, and instead of saying to her something like, if she said, oh, I had to stay up all last night to do that, a guy will say, well, then don't do it, as opposed to, wow, you're really dedicated. And to realize that women have so much more that they give to a job, generally speaking, there's certainly exceptions to everything, but that is one of the issues. And women will say this. They feel like I have to do so much more in order to get recognition. And what I'm pointing out to women is, while that's your experience, if you actually did less, you would get more recognition from men. Men give
Why
you
recognition.
Because men give you recognition when it looks like things are easy and you got it done. Then they say, well, I'll give you more to do. But if you're pointing out how much you're doing, then a man assumes you can't do more. So men basically are always putting out that, to a certain extent, it's all part of image. You know, it's kind of like, that's no problem. I got that done. I can get that done. That creates an opening from another man's point of view to go, wow, I can give him more to do. He must be really good if he can get that done so efficiently. A thing that men do is men tend to instinctively be better negotiators in terms of asking him to do more. They basically will say, if I do this, then I can't do, you know, if you want me to do B, C, D, I can't do A. Whereas a woman will often feel like, okay, I'll take on that other responsibility and you'll appreciate me more. But actually, a man assumes that if you can do it, then you did the best you could do, and you don't get more appreciation for doing more. I think that I've seen it over and over. Once we have more dialogue between men and women where men understand where women are coming from, then men begin to value the dedication, the extra energy that women put into a job. And they don't misinterpret it as if she can't do more, but they see it for the amazing dedication that she has to the job and that she can do more and she can have more opportunities. But at the same time, it's again, men feel more comfortable by nature to say no and prioritize what they are going to do. And if you want me to do more, then pay me more. Mm-hmm. Whereas women are kind of like, there's a feeling inside of women, which is if I just do my very best, then somebody's going to naturally give me more opportunities and I'll get more recognition and I'll get advancement and so forth. But men negotiate for that. You know, if you're a young guy and you're on a baseball team, you're over there saying to the coach, hey, coach, let me play first. Let me play first. And the coach says, no, you're going to sit this one out. And then the first baseman misses a shot. He says, look, I can do better. Put me in the game. We're losing because of him. Put me in the game. So to a young man, to a boy even, when he hears no, he doesn't hear no. He hears not yet. Whereas a young girl might go, okay, well, I'll sit this one out. The coach wants me to sit this out, and if I sit it out, the next game I'll get to play. So, you know, there's a lot of dynamics that are just sort of, our cultural experiences do support those dynamics, but there's also hard wiring, which is why I was wanting to focus on this one. So what you'll see in the brain, there's something called the amygdala, which is fight or flight. That's whenever there's a problem, there's blood flow to the amygdala, which says, okay, take action. In a man's brain, it goes right from the amygdala to take action. Let's just get it done. And for a woman's brain, it goes into, doesn't go to the action part of the brain. It goes to the emotional part of the brain and the memory of the brain. So where she's going to remember situations in the past, and she's going to have feelings about it, and that's connected to the talking part of the brain. So she's going to want to bring up, yeah, we could do that, but remember this other time when we did this, that didn't work out? That's the part of the brain which has memory, and women want to bring up the memory and discuss things, whereas men
feelings.
Have less blood flow to the emotional part of the brain,
right.
And they go straight into action.
Hmm.
So men tend to be way more impulsive doing things without fully thinking them through. Like, what's the outcome of this? If we go to war, how are we going to get out of it? What's the consequence going to be? What's the, you know, and for men, it's kind of like, well, we'll get in there and we'll figure it out as we go.
But a woman would be maybe more concerned about the community aspect of it and the blood and the loss of lives. I mean, would it be like that?
Well, that as well. But she's also going to have a greater tendency, that for sure. And she's going to have a greater tendency to say, and once we're in there, then what? And then what? And then what? And then what? And men are more along the lines of, well, once we get there, we'll be graded as liberators and everything's going to be rosy and fine. Without having thought this thing through or looked at other examples of where it has worked, they're much more comfortable taking risk. Mm-hmm. Why is that? Because when men feel stressed, their stress goes down when they take decision. So when a man makes a decision and says, let's go forward, it lowers his stress.
Mm-hmm.
But making decisions raises a woman's stress. So what she wants to do is build a sense of consensus. You know, that it's not like we're just running off and making a decision, but we're making this as a group decision together. And
mm-hmm.
she wants to hear different points of view. And that's what's called cooperation, collaboration, commiseration's in there, but that's not appropriate at this moment. And that all stimulates a hormone that lowers stress in a woman's body. It doesn't lower stress in a man's body.
Well,
but if a man
that's really interesting, you know.
Oh, it is. I mean, Harvard did the study on that one, which was, if you put men and women in cooperative, collaborative activities, they measured the stress hormone, and the stress hormone went down for women, but the stress hormone went up for men.
So we should get women in Congress.
Well, you see, we should, absolutely. The flip side of that story is if you put women and men in a competitive environment, stress level goes up for women and down for men. So competition helps men, doesn't help women. So if you put women in Congress, it will be more stressful for them. But at the same time, if they feel supported, meaning by the men, if there's a balance, that can lower the stress. And that's the dynamic here, is it's not like women would be better running everything, just as it's not better that men are running everything. What's better is that when men and women together are running things, that's been proven to be the best outcome.
That's you mean so when they just know what the motivation is or what the drive is in each side so that they can meld them. Hey?
Which is what you were bringing out in the beginning, which this book goes back to again and again, is learning, from man's point of view, learning to value the contribution that a woman's point of view brings to the table.
Mm-hmm.
And that only occurs, by the way, when it's pointed out to men again and again. And when you point out to men their lack of awareness, if it's done from the point of view that men are the problem, men will never hear the message. And that's been part of the feminist movement, is always, in a sense, complaining about the way men do things. Men don't hear that. If you complain, if you correct, if you criticize, if you blame, it will trigger in both men and women. There's no gender difference here. If you correct, complain, criticize, or blame, whether you're a man or woman, what happens is blood flow in your brain stops. It stops to the front part of your brain where you have the capacity to hear another point of view and to self-correct. You lose your ability to self-correct when you feel threatened or attacked, blamed, criticized, corrected. You can measure the blood flow. It goes to the back part of the brain, which is the more primitive part of the brain, which cannot change. It's programmed responses. So you will tend to repeat and justify what you do. And your whole awareness is blind to the possibility of change. And that's why, you know, as a therapist, you know, my background as a therapist is helping couples communicate in new ways so that neither side has the need to feel defensive. Mm-hmm. Saying to your, you know, we went through this phase of ever saying to your partner, you're getting defensive is a fruitless activity. Because if I have to say to you, you're getting defensive, then I'm already getting defensive. So neither of you can hear each other. So
I want to go back to that feminist thing again. It's very interesting that during that whole process, a lot of women then took on and adopted the male role.
Yes, that's a big point. You know, Barbara Annis, who's written this book with me, she's like the perfect partner to write this book because she calls how she used to be the third sex. She says, I am a woman, but to become successful and to become an executive in many big companies, she had to become like a man, to learn to think like a man, act like a man, behave like a man, and she could get ahead. But what she found is that the personal fulfillment in her life was gone, and that she had to find a balance so that she didn't have to give up her masculinity to be successful in the workplace, A. But B, if she did have a tremendous advantage over most women, is that she could understand the way men think and feel. Because she wasn't taking it personally or taking offense.
Mm-hmm.
So that's the one thing that we're putting forth to women who read this book, is that you can understand the way men think and feel. You will have a more positive experience because you won't take things personally. At the same time, you'll be more equipped to request and ask for the changes that you're looking for because you won't be coming from a place of taking offense, but from a more collaborative position, which is without judgment, without criticism, without complaint, but increasing awareness.
So there's one other thing I wanted to tie back when you wrote when Mars and Venus collide, and that was the last time you and I talked, actually.
Yes, yes.
And you were talking about how when women, and I think this is relevant here, where women, when we work really, really hard and then go home and have a lot of work to do at home, then women kind of not collapse, but our hormones get out of whack and we don't get our oxytocin going and that sort of thing. I think that's also important, isn't it?
It's highly significant. It's highly significant. And that's all part of, you know, and towards the end of the book, we're focusing on those kinds of solutions, mm-hmm. which are, you know, I get to that because I know many women are working in environments which aren't going to change overnight.
Mm-hmm.
So how do you cope with that? At the same time, what we're providing in this book is something that if men in companies become aware of this,
mm-hmm.
the company will change. It's like if you have a sick fish and a fish tank, you don't focus on the fish, you focus on changing the water. If you change the water, all the fish get better. And that's really what has to happen in the workplace, is that men and women need to have this conversation together. It's not just women making the change. It's women being able to have a conversation with men and men being able to listen. And as with my other books, once men hear about this book and start to read it, it will take off. But there's always that initial lag time that if women don't get the book first, because women have a greater awareness that there's a problem and we need to do something about it.
And we'll tell 32 other people.
That's right, and tell 32 other people. And the same thing happened with Men Are From Mars. Women bought it at first, but then 3 years later, more men were buying it and continue to buy it, almost equal with women. So men do want this to happen. They just don't know that pot of gold which is there. Women begin to understand how to communicate these issues to men, because when you realize there are blind spots, where another one of the blind spots is women feeling excluded. So much of the time, women do feel excluded, and men don't know why she'd feel that way. Another one of the blind spots is women, where men say women ask too many questions, and you say, "Women, do you think you ask too many questions?" They go, "No," but what they don't realize is that when they ask lots of questions, they alienate men. And what men don't know is when you don't ask women enough questions, then you alienate women. It's, you know, some of these things, they break down to, what's great about it, it does break down to some simple, small changes that can make a big difference. But it's not simple. It's a big, big issue. And we just have to lean into it, and gradually it changes when men and women are talking about this. But we have to understand what the solution looks like. In the meantime, you know, like you're bringing up my book, Why Mars and Venus Collide, we have some of that information in the back of the book explaining to women that because the workplace is designed by men for men, until it's designed by men and women together, for men and women together, it will produce a higher stress level for women. Then they go home with that higher stress level. To feel all the home responsibilities at a high stress level does not lower her stress, but increases it and doubles it. So it's now twice as high as what it was in the workplace. And that's been proven out with tests. Measuring cortisol levels double as soon as she's walking in the door going home. Just the anticipation of all that she has to do. Now, if her body at the workplace, if the workplace had provided a supportive, collaborative, communicative, supportive environment, it would be producing this hormone, oxytocin, so that when she went home, because if she had plenty of oxytocin, it would not raise her stress levels. Just the thought of now taking care of the family, just the thought of that would release more oxytocin. Uh-huh. You see, the way women are designed is that when they're under stress, their brain says to you, if you're under stress, give, nurture others. If you nurture others, it will lower your stress. But it only nurturing others only lowers your stress if you feel you if you already feel nurtured and supported with plenty of time and resources. So you have to have enough oxytocin for nurturing others to lower your stress.
Or reciprocal, so, right? A reciprocal nurture.
It's right. It's a reciprocal thing. A woman needs to feel supported. That raises her oxytocin. That still doesn't lower her stress. What lowers her stress is when the heart, what's called unbinding of the oxytocin so it can be utilized. So the unbinding of oxytocin then allows her body to utilize it and lower her stress. That only occurs, the unbinding only occurs when she's giving love. So if she's cooking for her family, say, or she's cleaning up the house even, all those activities theoretically in the past have actually lowered women's stress. That's why, you know, it doesn't happen now, but in the old days, you know, when women were stressed out, they would suddenly become obsessed with cleaning. You know, they could clean and they would actually make them feel better. But it doesn't make them feel better. Taking care of others does not make you feel better unless you feel taken care of. Mm-hmm. And so you're spending all day sort of working for money and competing. Those things do not stimulate the hormone oxytocin. So when you come home to create a beautiful home, a family, to nurture and support the people you love, giving love at that point doesn't lower your stress. And so what women need today is to understand that, to schedule themselves so that they create time to do those things that will increase oxytocin to compensate for the hours at work that are not creating oxytocin. That's A, and B, if they're in a relationship, how to adjust some communication to make requests so that you provide, so you get the kind of support you need to produce even more oxytocin. And once taught, men can help women to create more oxytocin. And that's where we go into the realm of relationship skills.
Well, let's do some more blind spots. But I keep thinking this book could be revolutionary, John. Do you know that? Like, you have to change the workplace. You have to really educate the workplace so that it's conducive to, well, oxytocin for starters, to conducive to recognizing each other so there's a maximum productivity, hey?
Absolutely. You know, one of the thoughts I had when I wrote Men Are From Mars is people ask me, and this is over 22 years ago, but they were saying, do you think this a book is going to change the world and, you know, change relationships? I said, I think it will help, but I think hopefully it will motivate more people to take workshops on relationships, because that's really where I would see the most dramatic results happening. And I was actually hugely surprised when people said just reading that book had completely transformed their marriages and relationships to such a point where I'd be, still to this day it happens, when I'm in the airport, somebody will walk up to me and say, you know, you're John Gray. I went, yeah. And they said, you know, we were divorced and we read your book and now we're married again. And aww, this book saved our family. And they're, you know, they're so appreciative of that. And that was something I had never experienced and continue to experience 20 years later. I keep hearing from people.
Isn't that wonderful?
Not that everybody who gets divorced reads the book and gets better. But many people say it was too late. I wish I'd read it sooner. However, it may be that's the case with this book, that actually the book itself will be adopted by companies and all by themselves. At this point, my hope and expectation is we do a three-hour workshop for companies where we go to the eight blind spots, and there's discussions between men and women. We play videos of men and women doing scenarios, and then we just say, what's wrong with this picture? And everybody can see it, so nobody takes anything personally, but they get to discuss it, and nobody feels attacked or blamed. And everybody walks out of these workshops feeling like, wow, my whole awareness has changed. I didn't even realize these things. And maybe the better thing is, I don't know if it's going to happen yet, maybe they'll get that benefit just from reading the book. I certainly did. Having written the book with Barbara, you know, you're in the process of writing it. It's a several-year process for us. But then when I read the final version after many edits, I truly felt like my gender intelligence had dramatically increased just reading it again. Because for men, it's really a matter of we're just not aware of what we're not aware of.
And I'm so conscious now of how many eggshells are in all of our lives, walking on eggshells.
That's another blind spot, which is we asked how many men feel like they're walking on eggshells with women. And most men felt like almost all felt like, yeah, I feel like I have to walk on eggshells around her. And when asked about women, their response was, yeah, we notice that, but we don't think you should walk on eggshells. We don't want you to treat us like we're these sensitive, you know, women who can't hear feedback. We feel like we're being held back. We're not given opportunities because men are always shy to give women direct feedback. And men are afraid of saying something and a woman will cry, for example. And women are going, wait a second, I'm not that woman. All it takes is for a man to experience it one or two times, and then he'll walk on eggshells from that time on.
But crying isn't so bad, is it? I mean, it can be a nice, healthy thing.
It is a very healthy thing, and that's why, that's again, a lack of gender intelligence.
Mm-hmm.
For men, it's not a healthy thing unless it's a giant problem. You know, like you'll see a president going, gee, my dad's dead, I wish he could see me here. You know, that's very sentimental, it's very personal, it's a big, big deal, I'm just becoming president. You know, when men have emotional reactions to big problems, that's expected. But when men have emotional reactions to little problems, that puts up red flags because men shouldn't do that.
Yeah.
And that's part of gender intelligence is the way men's brains are wired is that men's brains only become emotional if there's a big problem and you can't solve it. But if it's a little problem and you get emotional, you're not the kind of guy I want on my team. You're a whiner, you're a complainer, and you're a loser. And men have to learn how to toughen up and not whine and complain about little problems. But women don't. And it's essential for women to be authentically women, which they have a greater sensitivity and a different process of coping with stress. You see, the best way for a man to cope with stress is to not talk about his emotional reactions, but to back off and distance himself from his emotional reactions and analyze the problem. Go right into problem solving. If a man goes into problem solving rather than complaining, he will actually increase his testosterone and his emotions, negative emotions, will go away. They're gone. They're resolved. They're mm-hmm. done. He doesn't have to talk about them. He doesn't have to resolve them. He needs to detach from them, analyze the problem, solve the problem in his mind, make a decision to take a line of action, and that will actually then bring up positive feelings. So I'm not telling men to suppress feelings. I'm telling men to analyze feelings, focus more on solving the problem, and their negative emotions go away, their stress levels go down. This is proven when men are designed to cope with stress by detaching from emotion. Women are designed to cope with stress by increasing emotion. It allows her to change her expectations. You see, expectations, anytime a woman has emotional reaction, it's just reality didn't fit with her expectation. The same thing with a man. He experiences stress when reality doesn't fit his expectations. Like, oh, I expected that to be on time. Now it's late. That causes stress. What are we going to do about it? Well, a man copes with that stress by changing his expectation, by analyzing the problem and solving it. A woman's first reaction to cope with that stress, to adjust her expectation, is to feel the emotion. And her emotion will be there. She will feel frustration. She will feel disappointment. She will feel concern. And to be emotionally literate and have her and permission to feel those feelings, and so her tone of voice will have more emotion in it, but it will pass. It passes very quickly, and that means she's able to dispel the stress very quickly. The woman who is learning to be like a man and deal with it constantly, detaching from her emotions, she tends to become very brittle. She tends to become very rigid in her thinking, And she tends to form quite often these negative beliefs. I can't trust this person. I can't trust that person. And it's hard to reason with her at those times. You reason with a woman. We should always reason to solve problems. But when a woman's involved, if she's under stress, she will be much more reasonable if you allow her permission to be more emotional for a while, just to say, yes, that's so frustrating. Well, tell me your disappointments here. Create room for emotions to be in the workplace in a reasonable way, not to dominate it, not to control it, but to recognize that women, particularly when they feel safe to be emotional as they are, then they don't become over-emotional. Often women will become over-emotional because they will suppress and suppress and suppress, and at times it just sort of explodes. Mm-hmm. That's because the workplace does not acknowledge the value of emotions to assist people in coping with stress.
And a lot of women got men's diseases, what we used to call men's diseases in the workplace, trying to be like men too, didn't they?
Well, now we're talking about heart attacks, right?
Right, and ulcers.
And now more women than men are having heart attacks.
Exactly, and ulcers, right? And colitis.
I didn't know that part of it, but I'm going to look into that. That sounds that would make sense to me completely, mm-hmm. because if we look at women in the workplace, their stress levels are twice as high as men. Stress causes colitis. Stress causes heart attacks. Stress causes cancer.
Mm-hmm.
This is what's happening for women if we don't correct the workplace, or in the process of correcting it, that women become aware of so many of these blind spots where they'll take it personally. Let me give another example of a blind spot that causes huge stress for women and what a woman can do about it and then what a man can do about it.
Please.
It's you're at a business table, a bunch of men, women talking, working as a team, and the men tend to be dominating the conversation. Mm-hmm. When that's the case, often there'll be one or two women who are not talking, and they'll feel like they're being purposefully excluded. They're not being invited into the conversation, and they take it personally. As opposed to if a man is not talking, nobody's going to ask him what he's thinking. Men are actually, what those men who are talking are thinking is, hey, Tom's not saying anything. Well, I don't want to embarrass Tom and point out to him that he's not saying anything by saying something like, hey, Tom, what do you think? We assume that if Tom has something to say, he'd be jumping in and saying it.
Mm-hmm.
Well, the same assumption men are making when a woman's not speaking up. I assume if she has something to say, she'd interrupt and speak up. Now, that's a faulty assumption on his part, but from the woman's point of view, it's a faulty assumption to think that those men don't want to hear what you have to say. They just don't know that you have something useful to say. They assume, incorrectly, that if you had something to say, you would say it. And they're compassionately not pointing it out or putting you on the spot because they don't want to embarrass you. When the truth is, she's over there thinking, or her assumption is that, gee, they don't care about me, I'm not important, they don't like me, she'll take it personally, they don't value what I have to contribute, so they're not even asking me what I think. How can they not even ask me? I can't believe that I'm on this team, it's so unsupportive. That is all called taking it personally when you don't need to. And so that's the benefit for women in understanding this blind spot that men have. It's a blind spot that women have of not interpreting male behavior correctly. And this is very, very significant, because once you start correct understanding that so much of what men do is not personal, it's not about you, they do it to each other, they're not bothered by it, so it's not a personal attack on you, that in itself dramatically, and I want to emphasize, it dramatically lowers your stress level. This is another study that was done, and it shows that when someone steps on your foot, your stress goes up. But if you feel that person who stepped on your foot did it intentionally, then your stress goes up much, much higher. Now, not only does it go up higher if you're a woman, but women have a greater tendency to, the phrase for this is to ruminate. They will go over that again and again and again. And even the neuroscientists are seeing this, that when a woman is stressed, it doesn't just dissipate. It continues going on and on and on for days. She doesn't have the off switch. Men have an off switch. At the end of the day, when sun sets, literally blood flow stops to most of their brain and it resets. They can forget stuff. They can let it go. They can easily become distracted from it, much, much more so than women. There was one study that was done where they did blood flow measurements for men and women at the end of the day, and they found that while women were being tested, at the end of the day, their stress levels were going up just being tested. And you ask, what are you thinking? And she says, I'm thinking about all the things I should be doing that I'm not doing while I'm sitting here. Whereas for men, they would see that blood flow would stop to most of the brain. Men would literally stop thinking. And you ask him, what are you thinking? He says, nothing. And he's absolutely right. And women, if they don't have this test, they would think, how could he stop thinking? How can he just stop? That's all we have to do is turn on the television set, which is kind of mindless anyway, and listen to the news or watch a sporting event or see a mystery novel or an action show, and suddenly, or pornography, one or the other, suddenly we forget everything. And we now are distracted to one part of the brain that has nothing to do with the problems at work. Women don't have that ability, generally speaking.
Hmm. Well, that's interesting. So what do men do with their emotions? They just put them aside and they just turn on the TV and that takes care of it? And why do they have so many heart attacks?
Well, the point is that men are having less and less heart attacks and women are having more.
They handed them to the women. Oh, I see.
First of all, men are not like free of stress. I don't want to point that out. And men today, you have to remember, heart attacks did not start in this country until 1925.
Oh, really?
Okay, people, this is before the 20th century, heart attacks were extremely rare. And what happened is, as men prior to that time, prior to the now, where women have more heart attacks, but prior to that, men are under huge amounts of stress. And one of the major stresses for men is being out of work. That's the major stress for men, is not having work. And the second major stress for men today is being in a relationship where the woman makes more money.
Oh,
that's
really?
A major stress. Oh, yeah. I mean, couples where the woman makes more money. And often men are saying, I'm glad for she's making more money. But then you notice their stress level, the male stress level is much higher.
Oh, interesting.
Because there was like this golden era where in the 50s, where theoretically a man could earn enough money so his wife didn't have to work. And in that sort of situation, when that was the case, men's stress levels were very low. That's why it's considered golden era, the 50s, because a man got his, in a sense, he felt successful because he could provide for the woman and she could do what she wanted to do. And if a man can do that, just making money then is a major stress reducer for him. But today, your average male cannot make enough money to provide the freedom for his wife to do whatever she'd like to do. And when a man feels, I can't provide that for her, then he doesn't feel as successful. Men's stress levels all have to do with his feeling successful. Mm-hmm. Now, where a woman's able to communicate to him, like my wife does, she says, honey, I'm so lucky to be married to you. You know, you're not the perfect husband, but you provide that which is most important to me. You give me the freedom. You support me to do whatever I want to do. And she can work or not work. And she likes to work. And I have no problem with her working. And I have no problem with her not working. You know, she has the freedom to make those choices. That's called real choice. You see, one of the biggest stress reducers for women is when they have choice. That's why, you know, the whole women's movement is about we want choice. But in having the choice to go to the workplace and be treated as equals, having that choice is no longer a choice. Now it's an economic necessity.
Yes.
Where women feel they have to go to work. And whenever a woman feels, I have to do something, that is not an oxytocin producer. But when it's a choice, and I'm doing this because I'd like to do this, this feels good to me, I can go either way, giving women choice is actually one of the biggest stress reducers a woman can have. Mm. For men, choice is not a stress reducer. If you tell a man you can go to work or not go to work, that's called retirement. he has 1 year before his first heart attack.
Oh, really?
These are realities. I mean, this is women don't. But you give a man free choice, and he has 1 year before he has a heart attack. Tell a man you have to go to work in order to be successful, and he doesn't have a heart attack, but only if he feels he can be a success. And how does he measure that success? It's not necessarily, superficially he might measure it by dollars and cents. But dollars and cents only have value dependent upon his wife's response, dependent upon what he can do with that money. If what he can do with that money is make a woman happy, then he feels successful. Mm. The men who don't make a woman happy are the ones who die of heart attacks. And this is, again, borne out with real research that happily married couples have less heart attacks, less cancer. They live at least 10 years longer. These are the averages. This is what happens for a happily married couple.
Well, tell me about the hormonal levels and the happiness and stress level of a successful woman who's working and she's in a successful marriage, but it's really hard with her kids because just of the hours alone and the number of things kids can fall prey to these days. You know, isn't that a huge stressor as well?
It's a major stressor. There was, you know, it's you just created a hypothetical situation, which is not really that realistic, but I'll deal with it. Because, and let me tell you why it's hypothetical.
Mm-hmm.
Who is it? Sheryl Sandberg quotes a study in her book. And, you know, I don't know fully how to trust this study, but let's assume that it's true. And it says they measured women in 1970 how many actual hours of personal time that they spent with their children. Now, this is not the children are sitting around doing something or playing with kids in the neighborhood, but actually the parent one-on-one time with your child
mm-hmm.
was 11 and a half hours a week in 1970.
Mm-hmm.
And then they measured it in 2008 or something, and it was the same amount, is that women who were in the workplace still came home and spent that at least 11 and a half hours of personal time with their children.
Hmm.
So what that tells me, which is something I believe, is that mothers intuitively will prioritize giving their children as much as they can give their children. You know, it's like one woman was, when she found out my mother had seven children, she says, how do you do it? How do you do it? And my mother wisely said, regardless whether you have one child or seven children, you give them everything you've got.
Oh,
and
isn't that wonderful?
And that's
answer.
A mother's love.
Yeah.
And so mothers today are giving their children everything they've got. And that then, because women only have a limited number of hours when they're home from work, means less time for the woman and herself,
uh-huh.
less time for me time.
Mm-hmm.
And if a woman doesn't get enough me time in her life, her relationship will falter. She will not be able to have a successful relationship with her partner. So that's what I see now. And my expertise in personal relationships, when I see that they have challenges, one of the first steps I take is to create me time, where she is finding happiness without depending upon her spouse.
Hmm.
And certainly there could be some situations where a woman is happy in her marriage and the marriage is great and she doesn't have enough time for her children and she's feeling stressed about that. But even here, I would put up caution flags and say, wait till your children grow up and you get to what's called the empty nest, and you'll see that really you weren't getting what you needed in your personal relationship. You just felt okay because you saw that your big challenge was your children, and women will always prioritize their children over their husband. And so if you're able to be there for your children, you will feel a greater a pseudo-happiness where it seems like the marriage is okay, but really you're not getting what you need. Or in the case you suggested, is the mother is stressed out because I can't be with the kids and my marriage is doing fine. Well, that's because the marriage is not that important compared to your children. You know, we tend to focus on what's the biggest problem, and mothers will look to their children. And yes, in answer to what you just said, any parent today where you're at work all day, you're wondering what is going on with my kids, and you have a limited number of time with your children, and children today have to be guarded. They have to be protected. It's not like in my mother's generation where she could say to the kids, go and play.
Come back now at dark.
What was that?
Don't be late for dinner. Come back at dark or whatever.
That's exactly right. She'd ring the bell and we would come home. And there was at least the thought that we were all safe. Now, there's certainly a lot of fallout to that, but the world was not nearly as dangerous as it is now.
Yeah, I think that's huge right now.
It's massive, and it's gigantic, and the dangers are things that don't even seem that dangerous on the surface. If you're not creating activities for your children will go sit in front of a TV set. If you're not creating activities for your children, particularly boys, they'll be on video games. If you're not creating activities for girls, they'll be on Facebook and mm-hmm. living a digital life, which has nothing to do with developing real social skills of interacting with kids and finding within yourself the ability to overcome boredom. You know, parents today, their kids say, I'm bored, and the parents then suddenly go, okay, I have to find something to give them, and you give them what they want, which is often TV, or they want video games, or they want sugar, junk food,
mm-hmm.
and we want to gratify this sort of immediate gratification need rather than helping them to develop something called delayed gratification, which is life is not always exciting and stimulating, and you have to find something within yourself to make it more exciting. And that's what children do, is they create play. They learn how to create play. They learn to form relationships. But you can't just send your children out. You can't send them to your children's, to the neighbor's house, because they go to the neighbor's house, and there they have TV and video games and white bread and junk food and snacks and whatever. So that, what do
it's
you do? And you
cycle,
can't just send them out to go play, because now it's unsafe out in the world today. There's all kinds of predators. There's sexual predators. There's junk food predators. They're all over the place.
Wow.
Let your children go to the grocery store. They'll be eating junk food, you know, they need supervision now all the time to protect them from all of these sort of dangerous distractions. It's very sad.
That's a very big stressor. But I've so enjoyed this, and you've just got my appetite whetted, and I'm saying to everybody, the newest book is just wonderful, and it's called Women... No, wait a sec. I've got the wrong title here.
It's
help
okay.
Me.
Work with me.
Work... That's a perfect answer to my loss there. It's a very exciting thing, and I think it's going to change the workplace. You're going to do workshops in the workplaces, 3 hours?
Well, we already do them for the last 20 years. And, you know, some big companies like American Express is a very gender-intelligent company. Deloitte, which is a huge company, they've been giving these courses for years. Other banks and various places, but it's still a drop in the bucket. But you'll see that when employees take these tests, the satisfaction for both men and women goes up, and productivity, bottom line productivity, increases as a result of increasing gender intelligence in the workplace.
So it is proving itself as an effective tool, because it sure seems exciting to me.
It certainly is. So it's Work With Me, the 8 blind spots between men and women at work.
Thank you so much, John Gray. I'm so excited about your work, and thank you for making a difference.
Well, thank you, and I want people to know, if they go to MarsVenus.com, they can actually get a summary of the book for free. You can go right on the front page, so you can get a review of everything we've talked about, even more details, as a foundation to moving forward.
Thank you so much for being here.
You're very welcome.
Good night. This is Veronica Entwistle saying thank you. Check my website and you'll be able to download this interview, and you can hear it more than once. And tune in to MarsVenus.com for Dr. John Gray's information about his book. But he also has a lot of other things. He's got little instructional videos and so on. So check it out. Thank you so much for listening, and good night.